Hey guys, we've been thinking lately about the time-honored tradition of message music. So we thought we'd spend a little time talking about that this week on the Music Box. What's up, everybody? I'm Jimmy, here with my brother Wade.
What's going on, everybody?
Welcome to the Music Box Podcast. We're glad to have you with us.
Yes, we are.
This week, kind of a big topic. We kind of have kicked this around a few times and decided that this week's the week.
We should try it.
So, politics. Nothing makes people more comfortable than when people start talking about politics. Am I right?
That's exactly right. I'm totally squirming in my seat right now. So this is just to preface this, everybody know, you know, your opinion's your opinion. Our opinion's our opinion. And we'll try not to get too like opinionated as far as politics are concerned. We're going to try to keep this centered around music and our opinion of bands using their platform to push an agenda.
Exactly.
That's where we're headed this week.
Yeah, I don't plan to try to persuade you what to do when you get to the ballot box in November's to come. But just rather to discuss the idea and the effectiveness maybe of political music and really music with any strong message behind it, or
sure,
any music maybe that is centered around the idea of persuasion or just expressing one's opinion.
So I mean, gosh, I have like a thousand thoughts rolling around in my head. Both of us talked about the fact that we actually don't have notes. If you listen to the 1991 podcast, we had pages of notes because we were like super excited and passionate about talking about this. But when it comes to politics and music, there's just a couple of things that stick out in my mind. There's a couple of times that stick out in my mind. There's a couple scenarios. And then there's a latter part of politics and music as far as using people using and artists using their platform to not push a political agenda, but push a lifestyle agenda. And so you can go into that as well.
Absolutely.
You know, but maybe I'll start with my first thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that before the late 60s and, you know, Vietnam and all that stuff, there was political stuff going on in the 50s and stuff like that. But my earliest thought was this anti-war and peace music.
No, I agree. That's exactly where my mind went to start with.
Yeah.
That sort of protest music of the 60s. And that took a variety of forms. But I think, you know, probably that time in music, it was more prevalent than it has been any time since, even as far as the volume, like the sheer number of artists that were basically building a career on politically based and kind of politically motivated songwriting and artistry, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't remember, but was there a draft for Vietnam? Or was there a draft for World War II?
Yeah, both.
Both?
Yeah.
So the world is completely different in the late 60s when everybody's going for peace and and love and the kind of the hippie movement, Woodstock movement. That's why Woodstock was so amazing for people. It's because 100,000 people from all different walks of life came together and they thought it was going to be disaster.
Right.
And they just chilled out and they listened to music, and music brought people together. And I'm sure that on the Woodstock stage, there was political things. I mean,
absolutely.
My goodness.
The lineup for Woodstock was, I don't know that you can separate politics from that time in history in anything, whether it was music or film or, you know, books or, you know, TV shows for that matter. It was right. such a boiling point for the culture. I mean, for the United States, certainly.
Sure. I mean, obviously, I was not alive at that time. Jimmy wasn't even alive at that time, but...
That's a long time ago if I wasn't alive.
That's a long time ago. It's 50 years, you know? It's 50 years ago. But it's such a turning point. And those of you who listened that were, I mean, you might be able to ring in on how that music made you feel. Like, did it bring you together? Or here's a question. Does, I guess, depending on the moment in time and the situation that you're talking about, does it pull people together or does it actually rip people apart? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if I think about right now, there's a lot of stuff being pushed that I wouldn't want my kid listening to.
Yeah.
And that's just my opinion. If your opinion is different, that's fine. But there's a lot of agendas. Social media is crazy. I can't look one day without seeing the left or the right trying to shove something down my throat.
And
I just scroll through all of that junk.
Yeah.
But when it comes to music, I mean, the '60s, the late '60s was we're at war. So let's sing about it. I mean, Springsteen sung about it.
Right. And you're looking at people that are making this music were people who were being drafted. Do you know what I mean? They were writing music about the world from their perspective. And that's what their world was about at that moment in time. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like you and I sitting here talking about a draft. You know, we can think about it and understand it intellectually. But these people were living through it. They had friends that were going to Vietnam and not coming back. Like people that they went to school with.
Sure.
And people that, you know, I mean, you and I didn't grow up in a world like that. I grew up in a world, a lot of my contemporaries fought in major battles. I, you know, the guys that graduated a year or two ahead of me spent every Christmas for 4 or 5 years in a war zone with guns.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And that time of that Vietnam era, that was their reality. It wasn't a political idea. It wasn't my side against your side. It was like, hey, kids I know are dying in a war, and I don't know why.
Right. So... if we can move a little bit forward, if we leave the 60s where they were, gosh, we could spend a whole 10 days talking about that, I'm sure. Yeah,
that could be a few podcasts.
Yeah. But the difference in the late 60s and the early 90s, like we don't get this anti-war music coming out to bring the country together or separate the country.
Right, because these, they weren't wars. They were conflicts. Right?
They tricked us.
Yeah. And, and you know, to be honest, you know, I guess a lot of my contemporaries were in Operation Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
It was an operation, right? It was a, you know, it was a exercise. And, it was the first war we saw on TV. It was on TV. They showed it to us every day.
Yeah. I kind of remember that, being a young kid watching bombs go off over there.
Yeah, and watching how, you know, they were showing how we could, you know, put a missile in a building, like, in an exact spot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So it was different. The whole idea of it was different.
Well, I think there was a little less mystery to it. There was a little less he said, she said about it, you know.
And there wasn't a draft.
There wasn't a draft. The people there, you know, for want of a better term, signed up to go.
Yeah.
You know. And so there's no question that comparing, you know, the political environment of the early 90s to the political environment of the 60s, or the Vietnam era, the, you know, what mid-ish 60s through the early 70s, it's a totally different kind of mindset and perspective of what was going on in the world.
Right.
And you know, another, you know, probably another sort of thing that's that bears mentioning is that the war we saw on TV in the 90s weren't people that had been crawling through a jungle all day and firing weapons at each other. You know what I mean? It was bombs going off on buildings from above.
It was a different type of
with
war.
With a blurry satellite picture. You didn't see.
Yeah, there wasn't many boots on the ground at that time. Yeah, it wasn't like there, Vietnam.
And yeah. And when those buildings blew up, let's be honest, they were empty. You know, they were telling people, we're blowing up this building at 3 o'clock. Don't be near it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were putting information out and whatever. But we don't want to get into all that. We want to get into the music. And I don't, I mean, honestly, that 90s time, and we talked about it on the last podcast, you know, 91, that was the beginning of that time. That's when Operation Desert Storm started. But of that great music coming out, that thoughtful, time-changing, culture-changing music that was coming out of that time, it wasn't driven by politics.
Right. It was almost anti-government, anti-establishment, yeah. And that can kind of segue into, bands like Rage Against the Machine. Okay? Right. So Rage Against the Machine is literally a band.
They only talk about politics.
That's all they talk about. Their name, the machine, is the government. Rage Against the Machine, and so They have always talked about government, and I think it got them in hot water. But honestly, you kind of rally that rebellion in people.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about rallying rebellion, you got bands in the late 80s like the Sex Pistols and that punk genre that was all like.
But that's a whole different thing.
The heck with the government, like
yeah.
But that's bands using their platform.
Now, to me, this is an opinion I have, and this is a pretty strong opinion I have. The Sex Pistols, the Sex Pistols were anti-establishment,
yeah,
right? Not anti your side for my side. They were anarchists.
Anarchy, yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
They didn't want anybody in charge of anything. They wanted to do what they wanted to do, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Rage Against the Machine, they are not. They're pushing an agenda. That's different.
Okay. Yeah.
That's different.
You're right.
They're painting one side with a broad brush and painting their side with a broad brush, but they have a side.
Yeah.
Right? The Sex Pistols didn't have a side. Right.
Yeah.
The Sex Pistols were only about the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
Right. Rage Against the Machine is pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different thing. Even though they probably feel like that was a big inspiration for them. Obviously, they were heavily, influenced by the punk movement and the hardcore movement that kind of spun
which
out
was all rebellion.
After that into the early 80s.
Yeah, so, but I don't think either one of them bands cared whether or not they were mainstream and the fact that that message went so broad.
Right. No, I agree with that totally.
So I don't know if Rage Against the Machine was like, we're going to make music in our garage and I'm going to write these songs because I don't like government I hope millions and millions of people 30 years later are still talking about it.
What the Sex Pistols and Rage have in common is that they were strongly expressing what they believed, right? The distinction I make is that Rage is pushing an agenda. The Sex Pistols were saying, you can't control
right.
me.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that.
You know, that's splitting hairs.
You're splitting hairs,
but that, to me, is the difference between Rage and the Sex Pistols. To me, Rage Against the Machine isn't raging against the machine. They're wanting the machine to be their machine.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
when you get into what they've, expressed in their music.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can just take it a step further, and this is going to be a little
Say it,
I
man.
I feel like I'm out there a little bit
with this. This is our podcast.
I think that Christian music is the same thing.
Okay.
It is strongly pushing a worldview, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is promoting and trying to influence people to see things from a defined perspective that never changes.
Yes, I agree completely with you. Do we want to go there?
We're there.
We're not talking about genres.
No.
We're not. Is Christianity, it's not a political view, but it is right. A platform to sell what you like.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Christian music.
Well, let's say it like this. The Christian music market is established to support a singular worldview. And it only promotes and signs artists that support that worldview.
That is absolutely correct. And I hate to burst any bubbles of people that are listening.
Right.
Let me say this, that
is no way an indictment of the music itself.
No.
Some of it's good.
Some of it.
Some of it's good. Rage Against the Machine is good.
Yeah.
But they are pushing a singular worldview at all times.
At all times. And I know firsthand, I know many, 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 many stories that I've heard, listened to, podcasts I've listened to of bands that actually have got out of the Christian music world,
mm-hmm.
Not because they don't love Jesus, but because they don't like the record labels looking at them and saying, look, you guys have to write a song for the 35-year-old single mom that stays at home that needs hope.
Yeah.
And this is
right.
I understand.
Yep.
But and that's why as time goes on and you can kind of filter, especially, no offense if you like this stuff. This is an opinionated show today. But anything that I hear on a local Christian radio station, it's all just regurgitated songs of the same thing. It's mm-hmm. the record labels singing the same songs, the same popular worship song by another person. It's all the same thing. Right. But that's when you get people like Lauren Daigle. You get people like, Bethel back in the day when it was Jesus culture in Bethel and it was new and it was fire and you hear these newer things that's really authentic.
Right.
And then they start selling records and all the Christian labels go, ooh, they're selling records doing this. Let's make it sound like that. Let's make it do that. You got to write songs like that. They all got to have pad.
Let's do exactly this for the next 25 years until the next good thing comes along.
And that is called religion. It's doing the right thing for too long.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a... Oh, my gosh. Did I just say that?
I don't know, man. Did you?
Yeah,
you
might I have did. That. But... Nah. I'm just playing. But that's the thing. Like, there are different sounds that come at different times and different words that come at different times and different political songs that come at different times.
Right.
And we all say, ooh, that's popular. Let's recreate that. When things are changing and moving, and that's why people are constantly in looking for something authentic.
Right.
And that's when you find an artist and you're like, wait, check this out. If it's a Christian artist, check this guy out. It's fire.
Right.
There's something new.
Yeah.
It sounds different. Or they're just being authentic. They're on an independent label, and this guy can do what he wants to do.
And we talk about authenticity all the time.
Yes.
And enjoy it. Appreciate it. You know, whatever, I didn't really want to get into
I didn't either.
picking sides on an issue, but what I wonder is, what is the intrinsic value of music that puts worldview first? Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we live in a culture, you know, the social media culture has made the world a smaller place. And there's a lot of great things about it. But I think one of the, in my opinion, this is an opinion I have, one of the downsides of the social media culture is that everybody feels like their opinion has the most value of anything in the world.
Right.
Right? When you're in the privacy of your own home with your phone in your hand, you can type out anything you want and hit send. And you're going to feel strongly about that in the moment, at that exact moment in time, and you're going to be convinced that you're right. But let me tell you something. I think some things that I used to think were absolutely right or maybe less right now.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
And, you know, I don't, maybe the older I get, the less willing I am to try to find a hill to die on. So what I mean by that is am I going to find an issue and make that my issue? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can't. I mean, to choose
your battles.
And this is a personal thing that I probably shouldn't say. But to me, a person is a person. They aren't a lifestyle choice or a weight or a color. You know what I mean? That's just how I was brought up. Mm-hmm. I mean, my folks were just 60s enough to say, you know, I mean, my dad said, a man puts his pants on one leg at a time. Every man has my respect until he loses it.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't give you respect based on how much money you make or what color you are.
Right.
He gives you respect based on your humanity until you give him a reason not to do that anymore. Right?
Yeah.
And that's how I grew up, and that's how I'm becoming to see the world. When I was 19, I didn't see the world like that.
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
You know,
it was because you're so influenced at that age.
Right. When I was 19, I wasn't smart enough to know I don't know anything. Right? When you're 47, all of a sudden you go, man, the more I learn, the more I understand that I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Do you know? Out of all the things that I know have taught me that I don't know anything. And the thing is that with music in particular, a lot of the art that comes out of the music community comes out of young people. And so a lot of their worldview is narrow.
That's true.
You see what I mean? Because they don't have a wealth
experience.
Of life experience to draw from. They don't have, you know, they haven't lost. They haven't had people close to them make massive mistakes that they had to forgive them for.
Yeah, think of Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Okay. Starts at 16, goes all the way till she's 21, making pop music and whatever.
Right.
Has a complete meltdown.
I can't imagine the pressure.
No. And she's not putting music out now talking about Hit Me Baby One More Time.
No.
She's probably going to try to sing an actual song, but she don't sing, by the way. public service announcement.
PSA.
She never sings. She's a millionaire, which blows my mind. But her music is different.
Yeah.
You know, look at Christina Aguilera. Different music. Pop stars in general. But if there was one thing, an agenda that I wish everybody could jump a hold of, which most really popular and successful artists have done, it's love. Okay?
Right.
So let's give props.
Love's the one thing that you can look at any era of music and basically any genre, and that's going to be the staple of it.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about love for your spouse or love for your girlfriend. I'm talking about love your brother.
Right.
Love the person next to you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Like, just stop being judgmental.
Right.
And keep your... It's not my goal in life to make everybody think like me.
Right.
I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that have different walks of life, and I love them all the same until they give me reason not to do that.
Yeah.
You're entitled to the way you live.
Yeah.
I get to live the way I live, and hopefully...
The thing is,
spread the word, spread the love. But
the thing is, and I say this all the time, in certain settings when it comes up, when you're watching TV, and the guy on the TV, his mugshot's up there because he robbed a bank, right? That guy is a thief, right? We all know that. Mm-hmm. The guy on the TV is a thief. But listen, when your son goes out and steals something, he made a bad choice.
Yeah.
When you care about people, all of a sudden, your labels and opinions matter a lot less.
That's true. And, I get that. That lines right up. That's a very good point.
And I think the thing is that with message-oriented music has merit and has passion and all of the things that make music great and relatable, right? And that's good. But also, you run the risk. I mean, you don't have to pick a political side in this country to look at a poll and know that one out of every two people that you meet is not voting the way you're voting.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we live in a sharply divided culture, politically speaking.
Sure.
It's a 50-50 deal. There's no question about it. And anybody who thinks that their side has the lion's share or of popular opinion is foolish. So then you have to ask yourself, what is the economic sense in making political music in this day and age? Because you are, whichever political viewpoint you are on, you're eliminating half of the population of the country in one shot.
Right, right. It's risky. That's why most people who do it now, they don't care.
Right.
They're past the point. They're already successful. I mean, look what happened to Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Okay?
Let's talk about one career that was absolutely destroyed for some political reasons, and that was one of the biggest chick bands of the late 90s, early 2000s, in the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
Okay? The Dixie Chicks went from in everybody's CD player on every radio, and then 9/11 happened, and they said something about Bush, and it wasn't right. I'll just say it wasn't right. I'm not saying I supported him or whatever. I wasn't old enough to even care at that time. But
well,
it ruined them.
The thing is, and this is...
New album coming from the Dixie Chicks, by the way, next month.
This is where I wanted to go, bottom line for me, is that I fully support, as an American, I firmly believe that you have the constitutionally protected right to say anything you want to say.
Yes.
But you also have the constitutionally protected right to not sell records because of that.
Yeah, or to keep your mouth shut.
Right. Nobody owes you anything.
Yeah.
You know, especially based on your opinion.
Yeah, and so then that leads me to this question. If a very successful band puts out a song that's very opinionated politically and nobody buys it, are they going to throw an uproar? See, that's my thing. They're going to get all offended and butthurt that nobody bought their art. Well, I just didn't really want to support that art.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's my prerogative.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. The thing that irks me is, like, you know, lately, of course, there's a segment of the media that doesn't like the president of the United States.
Always.
I'm not going to get into that. But
no matter the president.
But every time the president shows up at a rally and they play a song by an artist, then they got to go to the artist and go, are you mad that Trump played your song at his rally?
Yeah.
like, dude, I wrote that song in 1974.
Yeah.
I never even heard of Donald Trump when I wrote champions. That song. I do like the check they wrote me for playing it. No, you know what I mean? It's just like, what do you want me to do? I wrote a song in 1981 that it got played at a political rally in 2019, and now you want my opinion about the president based on that? Come on, man.
And
seriously.
There are bands that have sued those campaigns for certain songs. Metallica for Enter Sandman sued John Kerry or something. He walked out to Enter Sandman, and they were like, nope.
Well, Metallica, they have a long history of litigation of trying to get paid for their music at all costs.
Napster.
Napster. Napster.
Oh my gosh, I haven't even said that word in a long time. I can't remember that.
The logo immediately pops into my head, though.
It does. That's awesome. I used to download on LimeWire, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... took me like 6 days to download two songs out on the farm on the old dial-up.
coo, coo, coo.
cricket. So, man, bands have pushed political agendas for a very long time. Some of the ones that I had in mind, I mean, NWA.
For sure.
F the Police.
Yeah.
It raised, I mean, that's right around the Rodney King beating, the like early 90s LA crazy cops beating up black people. And I'm not saying that wasn't real. There's some real stuff that happened. There's a lot of shady things that happened. They pushed an agenda there. I mean,
another thing that I kind of wanted to touch on at some point is, what is the effectiveness of it? Do you know what I mean? How does music during particularly volatile times change or shape public opinion?
Okay, well, in that, they had the LA riots.
Right.
Based upon that got people going absolutely nuts.
Right.
And crazy.
In the OJ trial.
And the OJ trial.
But yeah, it was obviously a racially tense time.
Yeah.
In the inner cities at that point.
And then you can...
Maybe it is now. I don't know. I don't live in the inner city. Yeah, I don't pretend either to know about that, but...
I live in the country.
Right.
The flip side of that is Alan Jackson's song, "Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning?"
Right.
On September 11th. That song brought the nation together. White, black, yellow, red, green, Indian, Asian. It did not even matter at that point. American flags were sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
September the 12th was like the most patriotic day in history. And they wrote that song.
But
that wasn't pushing a political agenda.
Right.
That was a moment in time that they wrote about.
Right. And that song brought everybody together. That song isn't about the politics behind the event.
Sure.
It's about the event, right? It's about how the event affected people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
More than, whatever courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
Hey, hey.
Which is obviously...
I love that song.
That's one of Wade's favorite songs.
It is.
Great song, but... But that song, see, is obviously pushing a worldview. Whereas Alan Jackson song is approaching it from a human perspective rather than a my side against their side perspective.
And I think the genius of Toby Keith in that song is that it didn't matter if you were blue or red, independent, whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Well, you like that song,
you know, because what that song
against
is
our country.
That song's an action movie. Right? Yeah. Where there's a good guy and there's a bad guy, and the bad guy looks like he's winning, but guess what? The good guy wins in the end because he's good. Because
we'll put a boot in your crack. It's the American way.
Maybe that's the American way. Maybe it isn't. But
and it wasn't crack. Sorry, I edited.
Yeah. Appreciate you cleaning that up.
I did. Know your audience.
Yeah.
Well,
and you kind of touch on the idea of how much does the music you listen to influence your decision making? You know, as a parent, you think about that sort of thing a lot.
Sure. Know? Yeah. Yeah.
Recently, my nephew went to a rap show, and his mom, my sister, was like, her son's 15.
Who was it?
I don't know who it was, man. I'm sorry. They just played at the Amp on Friday. And it was like a whole bunch of people. Like, it went on for hours. There were several DJs and some...
Yeah,
it was like a festival thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and so she's like, Bub, what's this going to be about? You know what I mean? Do you realize the kind of things that are going to go on or could potentially go on in a place like this? And, her 15-year-old goes, Mom, I listen to music all the time, and he knows what's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? How much is that influencing what he thinks is good and bad? That's a debate. That's a debatable question.
Yeah.
This music that's pushing an agenda or worldview, how much does that affect the average person that listens to it? First of all, how many people that listen to a song ever care enough about it to try to understand what it's about?
Right.
You know what I mean? And And secondly, how many of the people who are going to listen to a song enough to understand what it's about are going to be influential, or, you know, is influenced enough by it to change their opinion anyway?
Right. So let's segue into this as we're closing down on our time. Jimmy and I thought this would be a 10-minute podcast.
So much for the 12-minute podcast. Sorry, guys.
Speaking right to the point you're talking about, in 2009, this chick came on the scene named Lady Gaga, and she had a song called Born This Way.
Yeah.
Okay? So that song wasn't like an agenda, but it was like giving people at that time and kids at that time to be okay with who they are.
Right.
Okay? No matter what they are, who they are, their sexual orientation, their quirkiness, their nerdiness, their speech impediments, no matter what's going on in life, just be who you are. Yeah. I think that's a positive message.
That's a positive message.
That's a positive message. And so...
And what happens...
Don't you think that there were kids that were like, maybe I was born this way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's a lot of other controversial things that I could talk about.
Right.
About that pushing, but as I'm not going to.
As to whether people can change or if they're, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, obviously people can change.
Sure.
I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago, let alone 25 years ago.
Yeah, thank God.
Right. You know what I mean? Back when I knew everything.
Yeah.
I've changed a lot since I knew everything, you know? And people do change, but I suppose at my core I am who I've always been. I just, you come to understand who that is more.
Right. So, oh my gosh, I don't know how much I want to say, but you know, it's like Lady Gaga came along, and I don't care what her music is like. That chick's talented.
Oh,
she's talented. She can sing. She writes good music.
For real.
She's for real. She's a great artist. But it's like Lady Gaga did what a bunch of parents wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And said,
and you know, honestly, if you get to its core, a lot of that is because she believes that. And a lot of that is because she knew that that was going to be a hit at that moment.
Yeah, time. It's going to sell some records.
Where that, when that record came out and that, you know, in that cultural environment, listen, everybody in that machine was like, we are about to get paid.
You know? Continue to get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. It came across as more of love. Rather than, you know, it was like another way to say, just love yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a lot of agendas up underneath all that stuff that,
for sure,
personally I might not agree with, and you might agree with,
and some of that may belong to the artist, and some of it may belong to the culture pushing their own agenda onto the work that the artist
did. Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, and any songwriter will want to leave a little mystery. Any good songwriter is going to leave a little mystery, a little room for interpretation, because music's an individual experience.
It speaks to people on their level.
And like, you and I can both love a song, right? We could love the exact same song, exactly the same amount, for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
Because it means one thing to you and it means something else to me.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the art form
to me. Yeah, that's the beauty of standing in an art gallery and getting two different, like, revelations of what's happening in front of you.
Right.
Yeah. It's totally right. Man. Interesting podcast this week.
That was a little heavy, yeah.
I enjoyed it. I didn't say anything I regret. so I think we're okay.
Wait till the hate mail rolls in.
Well, hit us on MusicBoxPod on Twitter.
Yep. Send your hate mail.
Send us messages on the Anchor app itself. I had a good time this week. I had no idea where it was going. Literally, we were like super nervous today.
Not a note between us.
Like, where were we going to go? But I think that truly defines the time that I was having dinner with Jimmy and I was like, hey, I got this idea. You and I just sit around and we just talk. Why don't we just record it?
Yeah.
You know? And so it is what it is. This is exactly what it's like when we get together and we just talk, or as my dad would call it. No, I can't say that. I can't say that.
Your dad says something you can't say on the podcast?
Yes. Yes, because I don't want to explain it. remind me to tell you.
Next podcast, we're going to talk about stuff Richard says that we can't talk about on the podcast.
Which will be a two-minute podcast.
We'll age restrict it. we'll make sure our kids don't listen to it.
Oh, my gosh.
If we talked about stuff my Grandpa Sid said that you can't talk about on the podcast, that's a long podcast.
I have two things in my mind that my father said that I wouldn't say on the podcast.
Coming up on the music box.
Coming up on the music box. before we go, it's new music.
New music.
It's time for new music. If you do have opinions on the political side of things, Matt, we just brushed the surface.
Barely touched it.
I mean, we didn't get into anything. It was kind of what we think and songs that reminded us of that. So let us know what you think. New music for Jimmy. What you got this week, man?
This week, my new music, and I am super excited about this because I've been listening to this. This record, I listened to like the preview of it a couple of months ago. I just stumbled across it, and it's finally out in full. It probably came out a few weeks ago, but it's album's called Dragons by Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors. Just good Americana songwriting. The polar opposite of what we talked about today. It's super positive. And, it's not all sunshine and roses, but it's real Americana kind of uplifting music to me. I just feel good when I listen to it.
Yeah, we listened to it before we started. Yeah. It kind of sounded like Willie Nelson a little bit. Had a little Willie in there, some twang, some storytelling.
Look, a lot of storytelling and just a good vibe overall. If you just want to like chill out and feel good, this record does that for me. And thinking about all of this heavy kind of political and all of that kind of stuff this week, it really sat well with me. A couple of standout tracks on the album are Family and the title track Dragons. If you just want to listen to a song or two, those are both fantastic.
We encourage you guys to listen to this music that we're throwing out there. Broaden your horizons. I do know that both Amy and Jimmy this last week, Amy is Jimmy's wife, which is my sister, listened to the Almost and liked it.
Absolutely.
That Fear Inside Our Bones record is actually really good.
It's very, very
and
good.
So I'm excited about the new stuff from the Almost. My new music for this week is actually hip hop. It's rap. And it's by a Christian artist that's actually made it super mainstream. Very clean for your kids, your teenagers. Talks about some pretty heavy stuff.
I was about to say, but not stupid.
Yeah, yeah. It's not stupid. It's not made to tickle the listener's ear.
Right.
It's very
pretty honest.
Eminem-esque as far as the way he writes and the things that he talks about, battles and struggles. And if you got teenage boys and girls that like hip hop, my new artist of the week is NF. He put his first record out. That's literally what it sounds like. Capital N, capital F on your Spotify or Apple Music, whatever your streaming service is that you get for free or pay for. NF. And the album that I want to point you to is called The Search. It came out this year. And I want you to listen to the title track on that record called The Search.
It's fantastic.
Jimmy and I just listened to it. And that guy, he spits some bars. And I got a 10-year-old son that... Yeah. We request it every time we get in the truck. Dad, turn on NF. So, NF, it's positive. It's uplifting. Can maybe get you into some hip hop. Maybe a little bit. It's pretty heavy.
I'm going to listen to that record. I was really super impressed with the track we listened to before we went on.
Yeah.
Super impressed. Really good.
I listened to that record nonstop for the last week or so.
Yeah.
I still listen to Foy Vance like it's my religion now.
Like it's oxygen.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But anyway, guys, thank you. Thanks for listening to the Music Box Podcast. We talked about politics. We'll see how many hits this one gets. And we'll see you next week. I have no idea what we're talking about.
But we'll find out.
Things Richard Decker says that we can't say.
The world's shortest podcast. Well, join us next week, and we'll have something to talk about. I'm sure of it. We never run out. See you next time on the Music Box.